Kick-Ass Best, sharing tips to help empower you to take control of your career. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We are chatting with a veterinarian that has a unique experience at being a vet in terms of research. He has a couple other experiences that are neat that I'm going to quiz him on that we'll get to about internship and, you know, whether or not to specialize, desires to do that, yes or no. But the main thing I want to chat with him about and get his input on is some research that he's been doing, which I didn't even know you could do as a vet without having a master's or something else. So I think that's really interesting for everyone. So welcome. Thank you so much for coming. I'll let you give us a brief rundown of your veterinary history so that our listeners know where you're coming from.
Okay, so I started off in London. I actually did an undergraduate in molecular biology, then moved to Sydney, did my undergraduate in veterinary medicine here. After that, I moved straight on to an emergency and critical care internship at one of the big referral hospitals in Sydney. After that, I went to work for one of the universities in a surgical research lab. It was focused inside a human hospital, testing out human devices, surgical techniques, etc. And after that, I decided to become an emergency locum while I wait to try and get a cardiology residency somewhere in the world at some point.
Cool. Awesome. So obviously just GP clinical practice doesn't appeal to you?
No, not really. I used to work as a vet nurse in the emergency center during vet school, so I got used to the sort of high-paced, high-thrill environment, and I've done a few GP shifts. They're just a bit too slow for my liking. There's not enough adrenaline in it.
Cool. So with your internship, just very briefly, would you recommend an internship? Would you do it? Would you recommend it for everyone, no one, as a stepping stone only, or, you know, who would you recommend it for?
I did it straight out of vet school, which is not typical in Australia. It is in the States and the UK, but not so much in this country. I would recommend it because you walk out of vet school with a textbook in your head, but no actual practical knowledge, to be honest. And I think doing the internship straight out probably pushed my career forwards by 3 or 4 years in one go, to be honest.
Do you feel that you had an internship that really fostered hands-on clinical stuff? Like, what would you recommend in terms of looking for an internship? Because as we were talking about a couple minutes ago, they're not all created equally. So what would you recommend, like, top 3 points for people looking for an internship?
Top 3 points. If you know you want to follow a specific pathway, maybe focus on an internship in that specific discipline, because you might find a rotating internship quite difficult when the subjects which you're not interested in come up. If you're undecided, then definitely rotating internships is a good idea. I think with internships, you just need to have the right expectations. They are hard work. They're long hours. You may work every single day of the week, double shifts. It's not vet school. It's a stark reality is it's hard work and you don't get paid much to do it.
But here in Australia, you get Modern Award, essentially, which is with the same. To me, when people ask me, oh, should I do an internship coming out of school? I'm like, well, if you're going to get paid the same amount, why not do an internship? Like at home, you graduate, you're making $75,000. If you do an internship, you're making $20,000. So it's a huge financial hit. Where here, I don't even feel like, given that a lot of new grads aren't getting more than Modern Award, there is a financial hit. Like there's no tuition or anything that you...
There's no tuition. It is Modern Award, so you're probably looking at the low $50,000 Australian, which, yes, is a lot compared to the American or Canadian system. Obviously, cost of living in Sydney is extremely high, so yeah. You can't live on $30,000. But it's the different way of thinking about it is you don't get paid much per hour. So if you're working in a GP clinic and you get paid $50,000 to work a 38-hour week, that's one thing. But if you're doing an 80-hour week and getting paid $50,000, suddenly...
Right.
You start feeling a bit.
So it depends what you want to get out of it and what you want per hour versus the value of the salary of what you need per year. That's a good point.
Yeah, so if you've got a lot of financial commitments and the internships are really hard to do and you probably need some support from somewhere else, but at the same time, you don't go into an internship for the money.
Yeah.
You go in it because you want to gain that experience and that knowledge fast.
Cool. And I'm going to come back to the research stuff. Briefly, you're interested in doing a residency in cardiology. Why cardiology? Why specialize? Do you not feel that you can learn things and provide that care in an emergency setting or a GP setting? What makes you want to take that step to specialize?
Initially, I was undecided between becoming a surgeon or a criticalist. That's why I did the emergency internship straight out. But after I started, I did realize that the cases I was most interested in were the cardiac ones coming in. And I have a very big interest in interventional radiology.
Oh, cool.
So cardiac does fit in quite well with that. And I like all the extracorporeal therapy stuff as well. Again, not so specific cardiac, but a side branch. So that's why my interests are, and that's why I'm pursuing that. Emergency is great. We need a lot of emergency vets, a lot more than we have. It's just, at the same time, when you have a specific passion and focus, it's hard to remain in a field which is not exactly what you want to do.
Fair
enough.
You
feel unsatisfied and like there's something missing.
Yeah, I can feel that. That makes sense. All right, now I'm going to get you, because we're limited of time, unfortunately, due to Sydney traffic. I'm going to jump right into this research opportunity. So tell us about it. How did you find out about it? What do you do? What do you like about it? What don't you like? Would you recommend it? Just anything that you want to tell us about it.
I must be honest, I found out of it through a specialist surgeon friend of mine. I didn't see an ad for it anywhere. He just told me about this opportunity. And I was like, okay, I'm interested in trying out surgical research. Went and met the boss. We got on quite well from the start. And next thing you know, I'm hired.
Just cold call him, or did you just send him an email?
I didn't cold call him. I kind of got my friend to drop a hint that there was someone interested. And
okay.
Then he was like, yeah, put me in touch. And then we had the first phone call. And after that, he invited me to go and spend the day with them just to sort of oversee what was going on. And he pretty much offered me the job that day.
Awesome.
We had to do like a fake interview because of university policies. But
yeah, red tape.
Yeah.
What does the job entail, as much as you're allowed to tell us about it?
So it's based in a human hospital. It's all medical devices designed for human use. It's not for vet use. We did spin off a lot of the things for vet use, but at the end of the day, the money is in human medicine, not vet medicine. Hence, it started there. So a lot of it was novel surgical devices, like spinal implants and things like that for fusion, biomaterials for to improve tissue healing, new devices designed for effectively ACL reconstructions, things like that, pretty much. And we tested them out in animals for FDA approval, pretty much.
For animals, not for humans.
It's actually for humans.
It
has to go
humans.
Through an animal model first based on
the
FDA.
So the end goal is to get to the human market.
Exactly, yes. But it has to go through animals first.
Right.
Everything has to go through animals, even toothpaste half the time.
But with this research, are you finding, oh, wow, like, why aren't we using this?
Oh, definitely.
In animals. Is there a reason that nobody is just saying, okay, well, we're testing it, it works, bring it to the vet market?
We did spin off some things that way. Most of the time it's a financial limitation. Sometimes there's no practical use for them because ACL reconstructions in dogs and cats are pretty difficult because they're so small, so there's not so much of a use in that field, for example. We did do some spinal fusions in dogs through one of the other universities, which proved to be quite successful. The problem is the cost most of the time. Like,
okay.
You'd 3D print a titanium implant, which costs thousands of dollars, and then the equipment you need to put it into a human costs about $500,000.
Oh, wow.
So it's numbers that the vet industry can't afford yet.
For sure.
Obviously, price will come down over time, but
yeah.
At the moment, it's a barrier.
And are you doing the surgeries? Are you assisting? Are you overseeing? What's your role in that avenue?
So effectively, anything animal was my job. So I did the surgeries. There was a few of us. I would do some of the surgeries with a human surgeon or one of the other lab technicians that was trained in surgery. All the post-op problems I would look after. We'd look after the husbandry, which I'll say is excellent in research animals, far better than livestock in a farm setting. Then unfortunately, the reality is they get culled, because you need to do histology of the surgical sites.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, we do the culling and then the post-mortem.
Okay, cool. So really quite variable in terms of, it's not like you're just sitting there being the veterinary on staff because they have to legally have it. You're really hands-on doing stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Some of them have vets on call where effectively the lab researchers do the surgery and if there's a problem, they get one of the vets in. There's vets on the ethics boards controlling the research, but most places don't actually have a vet on site. It's just our surgeries were much more complex than the average one, so it made sense to have someone on site that could respond to a problem immediately, but also because the turnover was so high.
Do you think that that's a lack in the discipline of that? Do you think there should be more vets on site? Do you think your role there was really quite helpful to those animals and their, you know, pain scores, well-being, just things that people don't have to deal with on a daily basis, knowing what an animal in pain looks like post-op?
Yeah.
A human surgeon isn't going to know that.
No, and the anatomy is also quite different as well, so they often need help with that sort of stuff. I think it's definitely a good idea to have vets on site. The bigger places like the one where I was at, which have a high sort of like turnover of projects, should probably have their own vet. You could probably have one vet per university doing sort of controlling other labs, because a lot of labs only deal with mice, rats on a more sporadic basis. So they don't necessarily need to have someone on staff, but at least someone they can go to for those days.
Yeah. Okay. And you said you kind of got in through the back door. If someone else was listening to this and said, man, that sounds really interesting, really unique, really, you know, I'm keen on that, what would you recommend them doing? Just cold calling places, asking questions? Like, how would someone go about finding that job?
Cold calling is probably not a bad idea half the time. We're probably looking in the wrong place half the time. Like, Kookaburra vets won't list a job like that. You're looking at Seek and these other sort of big...
Indeed, cross-discipline research engines.
Yeah, exactly, because they tend to advertise there, so that's the sort of place you might find the job.
Mm-hmm.
If you know any specialists, to be honest, they're always good people to talk to, because they tend to have their fingers in lots of different pies, including these research ones, so they often are quite a good avenue into these sorts of jobs.
What do you think pathologists would be a better avenue? Like, contact your local pathologist that's doing the report saying, I'm interested in this, do you know if there's any spots?
Definitely, because we used to have a pathologist from one of the universities come and actually help with some of the more complex histology. We could do most of it in-house, but the stuff which is a bit abnormal and weird, we used to get in the pathologist, which is a vet pathologist, and a human one as well.
Cool. Would you recommend it? What type of personality would be good for that job?
It's the type of personality you need to be... You need to be patient, which is probably not my biggest trait. Definitely not. But also, it's a very different way of thinking. Everything's very regimented and very structured. You don't deviate from the plan, because the minute you deviate from the plan,
your research
is invalid.
Yeah.
So you need to be disciplined in that sense. You can't be the person that always wants to do something different and always wants to break the rules, which is sometimes a bit hard to do, because they do things that seem inefficient and you think, oh, I can improve it this way, but you can't. You just have to
follow the research protocol. Do you find that your undergrad in molecular biology helped with that in terms of, you know, more of a science-y type?
It did, because we had to do an honors project, so we had to do some research, and that helped with understanding how research actually works.
How
so
to set up a proper study.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. You need to,
what a control group means and why it's important.
Exactly, yeah. If you don't know that, then it'll be a hard job to get used to. If you're not interested in research, definitely don't do it, because research is quite... I always used to say it's very interesting at the beginning, very interesting at the end, but very boring in the middle. Yeah.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Hours and hours in labs of like pouring one thing into another.
Doing exactly the same thing 200 times again and again and again.
Oh gosh, 2 a.m. running experiments, because that's the only time the machine's free. Yes.
Yeah,
tedious
exactly.
is a very good word for research. Financially, you know, don't throw out numbers or anything like that, but is it comparable to clinical practice, better, worse for people that are, you know, have financial commitments they can't deviate?
I can't speak for every place, but because it's a university and the human hospital, it's very structured what they pay you. You can find out online, but it's generally a lot better than what clinical practice is, especially if you're in the earlier stages of your career. There's a lot of perks as well working for universities, such as like you get 20% super or something along those lines, and then you can lease a car, you can salary sacrifice, all this sort of stuff. So there's a lot of perks working for them.
Yeah, sounds like a good job.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a lifelong job, do it for a few years because it's interesting job? You know, would you do it and then come back to clinical practice when you're getting a little bored or burnt out?
For me, it's not a lifelong full-time job. If I specialised, I'd like to be able to do my speciality like 2 days a week and then research for 2 days a week. That would be a healthier blend.
Mm-hmm.
I did miss the clinical side, personally. For some people, it is a lifelong job. A lot of the researchers there have been there for 20, 30 years. And it's their passion at the end of the day. It's very personal.
Yeah.
If you're 100% set on clinics, it would definitely not be something it'd be a lifelong job. It's sort of thing you do for a few years, get that experience under your belt, get a few papers published properly. If you're looking at specialising, it's always helpful.
Yeah, true.
But, yeah, it's very personal.
Has that role let you publish?
We're in the process of publishing a lot. It's not, obviously, fast turning over papers, especially even as human stuff.
Yes.
A lot of barriers to get through, but it does help with that a lot.
Okay.
And they only aim for higher sort of tier things, so quality over quantity.
For sure. Get that Nature publication.
Yeah, exactly.
High impact factor.
Yeah.
And how many years of clinical GP practice or emergency or internship, you know, after how many years of practice would you recommend someone jumping into that? Or is it a new grad thing? Like, what would you recommend?
It's not a new grad thing because if you're doing a lot of surgery, then you need to be good at surgery when you walk in on day one. You can't be the first person that can't suture.
Yeah.
You won't get the job. It's probably more ideal for someone that's been doing vet work for 10 years, 15 years, is a bit over clinic work, got a lot of experience under their belt. That's the sort of person I'd see the job working for the best because it's completely different. It's a fresh start. Don't have to deal with clients, things like that. Otherwise, if you're interested in academia / specialization, I'd say probably 3 years is the ideal mark.
Okay.
Cool. I was probably a tad early. It's a steep learning curve.
I was there before I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it.
I felt that for the first 6 months.
Fair enough. Well, every new experience, it sounds like any clinical practice will prepare you, but nothing's really going to completely prepare you for that setting. It's so different. It's so, you know, obscure compared to what we're used to.
Exactly.
I think anyone, even if you have 10 years experience, it sounds like jumping into that would be a little bit of a, ooh, get your feet wet situation.
It definitely would, especially if you haven't dealt with more, let's say, sheep, pigs, rabbits, those sort of animals, because that's what research has done on. It's not done on dogs and cats anymore.
Yeah.
So if you've not done that sort of stuff, then yeah, it's another steep learning curve, remembering how to treat bloats and sheep and stuff like that.
Fair enough. I know I need to let you go so that you can get to your shift. Anything else that you would recommend, whether it's related to this job or just life in general for vets, that you want to tell our viewers?
My rule is it doesn't always help, but it's never say no.
Oh, I like it.
There's so many opportunities come your way, and if you say no, eventually the opportunities stop coming. I've always been a yes sayer, and it's got me some interesting places. I haven't followed a straight linear path.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not something you ever need to do, but it's still interesting. Sometimes it helps you huge amounts. But you just need to be willing to sort of give something a shot, even though you didn't think it would be something you're interested in.
Cool. I like that. That's definitely up my alley.
And start locuming. That's another good thing.
Start locuming. Why start locuming?
Set your own schedule.
And meet wonderful people.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and effort. And I'm sure that our listeners are really happy to know that these other obscure opportunities exist that they had never heard of. I'm excited about it. I'm like, oh, maybe I should go do
well, I have the contacts
research.
If you want.
Sounds good.
Back to entry.
If anyone has any questions for our lovely vet who's remaining anonymous for purposes related to animal welfare groups that might come knocking at his door, as we've all experienced, those of us that have done research with animals in the past. So I completely appreciate your desire to remain anonymous. I know how that can go. But if you have any questions or comments, feel free to contact us through the website. And as always, advocate for yourself. You're the only one that will. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.